Blog Talk Radio.
Take back control.
welcome to the Rifleman Radio Show. The Rifleman Radio Show is brought to you by the Appleseed Project, which is the sole project of the Revolutionary War Veterans Association. The Revolutionary War Veterans Association is dedicated to bringing you the absolute best fundamentals of rifle marksmanship program in the United States today. I mean the absolute best. No one does it like we do. No one really does it at all. And we have worked hard to make sure that we have our craft down, we have our trade down, and no matter what your skill level is, if you come to an Appleseed two-day rifle marksmanship weekend, you're going to get your money's worth and more, because we're going to teach you all of the skills and techniques handed down to us from 500 years of firearms usage. And not only that, you're going to get some information that maybe you didn't get anywhere else. Maybe you didn't get it in public school. Maybe you haven't heard it. Maybe you didn't know that April 19th, 1775 was the day our nation began. It wasn't July 4th. That was when we declared independence. But our nation actually began on April 19th, 1775. That's when men and women stood together in ranks to fight for their freedom, fight for their liberties. And this occurred at Lexington Green, at the North Bridge in Concord, and along Battle Road back to Boston. You're going to hear about this. You're going to hear about the ideas that that the founders had for this nation. And you're going to hear about the folks involved in April 19th, who they were, what they did, why they did it, and what you should be doing today. You know, I talk to you guys all the time about the sacred responsibility that each and every one of you have, each and every one of us have, to maintain the freedoms and liberties that living in this nation affords us. And it's no easy burden. The responsibility that you have is a sacred one, and it's a non-delegatable responsibility. You can't say, well, I'll just let my mom or my dad take care of that. They're kind of involved in what's going on in the nation. I'll let them. I'm sure that they'll do the right thing and they'll make the right decision. Or I'll let my buddy do it. He seems like he knows what he's doing whenever he does stuff like that, when he talks about the government or our rights or our freedoms. Or better yet, how about if I let my senator or congressman take care of it? That's their job, isn't it? I mean, certainly I can trust them to look out for my best interest, can't I? We know where that road goes, so it's your responsibility. It's your sacred responsibility to ensure that you're maintaining the freedoms and liberties that living in this nation affords you, and that you are continuing on in the same tradition as the founders, so that the nation that you leave for those who come after. And all of us are invested in this somehow. I want to leave a better nation for my daughters, for my grandkids, my great-grandchildren, for the millions of Americans who I'll never meet, just like the founders did for us. I can bet it's a certainty that Franklin and Jefferson and Hancock, you never met any of them, right? You've got no ties to them, and yet they did. They risked everything that they had in order that you could have the freedoms and liberties that you have today. So this is a bit of what you're going to be finding out at an Appleseed two-day rifle marksmanship weekend. You're going to get a rock-solid foundation in rifle safety. You're going to be taught the full set of fundamentals for rifle marksmanship that's going to, no matter where you go on your rifle marksmanship path, you're going to need these. This is not the basics. This isn't the bullet goes out of this end and this end goes against your shoulder and don't get them mixed up. These are the skills and techniques that you'll need no matter where you're shooting or why you're shooting. If you're going to hunt game, then you need this just as much as the high power shooter or the military marksman. So you want to find out how to get to an event, because we host an event every weekend somewhere in the United States at a location within a reasonable driving distance to you. Is a rifle marksmanship weekend. Every single weekend of the year, within a reasonable driving distance of you, is an Appleseed two-day rifle marksmanship event. And when I say reasonable driving distance, I mean a reasonable driving distance. And, of course, that's different, more different from some people than others. But my first event, I drove, I guess, about 1,700 miles one way. So I think anything under that is fairly reasonable. And you're going to find events a lot closer than that now. So in order to find one, you can go to rwva.org. That's our homepage. On the homepage, there's a list of tabs across the top. Look at the second one from the left. It will say Appleseed. Put your cursor on that. You'll go to drop-down menu. On the drop-down menu, select Schedule. That will take you to a page that will show a map of the United States. Put your cursor on the state where you would like to attend an event. Click on that, and it will give you a listing of the events held for the year in that state. Now, if you live near a state border and you want to see other states' events, or you want to see what's going on all across the United States, in the text above the map, there's a hot link. You can click on that. Once you've decided where you'd like to attend an event, and when I say once you've decided, what I mean is don't think about attending an event. Don't think about it like this is something I should probably do someday, because sometimes folks' lives are filled up with things that they should have done, things that they wish they would have done, and don't let this be one of those. Make this an event that you you make sure that you attend. So when you look at the event page and you find the one you'd like to attend, there's two hot links to the right. One of those says event information. That'll take you to the event information page. It'll give you the location, who's running the event, where it's going to be held, contact information, and any additional information, state laws, etc. And then right beside that one is another one that says register. That's so you can pre-register to attend the event. Now, I'm not going to tell you that if you don't pre-register that the event's going to sell out and you're not going to make it. There's a good chance that you'll be able to do a walk-on, but it's going to cost you $10 more, and you do run the chance of the event being sold out before you go there. Plus, it helps us. We're doing hundreds of events every year. I mean, every month now. Every year. That was many years ago that we're doing 100 events in a year. We're doing hundreds of events every month now. And it helps us to know how many people are going to be at a certain location, because we have to schedule thousands of instructors to make sure that they are getting to the event, hotel reservations, airlines, rental cars. We have to have gear shipped out to each of the events, porta-potties, et cetera. And there have been several occasions where we've had events that were sold out. And because we knew that they were sold out ahead of time, we were able to secure additional line space at a location either at that event or somewhere in that town. But I can guarantee you that if we don't know that it's going to be sold out, we're not going to do that, all right? So do yourself a favor and help us out by pre-registering for the event. All right. This is the last show of 2011. It seemed like it just flew by in one way. And I was talking to Respiratory Pop today on the phone, and we were talking about how time seems to spin by, and it really spins by in Appleseed, because it almost seems like Appleseed years are like dog years, that for every year in Appleseed it seems almost like 7 years long, and the things that have occurred semi-recently, like 6 months ago, almost seemed like it was years ago, and it's been a great year, and we've been growing at an amazing rate. There's never been an organization like this that has grown at this rate, and certainly there's a lot of glitches when an organization grows so fast, when the membership grows so fast, and then when you're running so many people through the program, when you're spreading the message at such a fantastic rate, then there's going to be stuff that goes on. But we've had a fantastic year. Next year is going to be even better, and we'll start off the radio show's new year with Dr. David Hackett Fisher. Dr. Fisher is a Pulitzer Prize-winning author of Washington's Crossing, and he's written a great many books, including Albion Seed and Champlain Dreams, and, of course, the Appleseed Project unofficial textbook, which is Paul Revere's Ride. Now, you guys have read Paul Revere's Ride, so you know there is no greater detailed book on the events of April 19, 1775 than Paul Revere's Ride by David Hackett Fisher. And when he wrote Washington's Crossing, he did the exact same fantastic job, and certainly it was good enough that it won a Pulitzer Prize for him. And I've spoken to him on the phone several times lately, and we had a great conversation yesterday, and he's doing a lot better. He got past his illness, and he's back on track. And for a man who is, he's got to be 75 or so, he's really traveling at full speed. And he's excited to come on the show, and we're going to be talking about Washington's Crossing and the battles of Trenton and Princeton, the First Battle of Trenton, the Second Battle of Trenton, and the Battle of Princeton, and the effect it had on the American Revolutionary War, because it was a pivotal moment in history. Without these battles, there's a good chance that the American Revolutionary War may have spun off. It may have died. But because they made the battles, because Washington decided to make this this tremendously risky gamble and take his small force and attack at Trenton, and then again at Trenton and Princeton, it changed the course of the war, and it reinvigorated the American Revolutionary War cause, and we went on to win. Now, it wasn't a speedy win. As you know, this was an 8 long, bloody years. But without the victories at the Battle of Trenton and Princeton, we may well have run out of gas there at the very beginning. And we're going to tell you why. We're going to explain about those. And we're also going to talk about the forage war that continued on after the Battle of Trenton and Princeton, the forage wars of 1777. So make sure you put that on your calendar to tune in on January, I believe it's January 5th. It's posted on the show schedule. So make sure that you have that on your schedule and you're ready to tune in for that. Now, I got something real quick that I want to try for you guys. I want you to listen closely to the phone, and I'm going to work the action on three different firearms. And the first person to call in with the correct firearms in the correct order will get a free Appleseed certificate. You guys will be able to attend an Appleseed event free. That's a $70 value. Or you can give it, if you're already an instructor or already a member, you can Very easily hand that off to one of your buddies and get them to come to an event. All right? So I'm going to set the phone here. I'm going to work the action one at a time on each of these firearms, and you're going to tell me what it is. I'll do the action a couple of times for each one, and then you're going to tell me what it is. Be sure and write it down so you get it in the correct order. All right, here we go. Here's the first one. Okay, that was the first one. Here's the second one. That was the second one. I'm doing each one three times. Here's the third one. All right. That's all three of them. That can be either a rifle or a shotgun. You guys write down what you think it is, and then you can call in and give me your guesses as to what it is. All right, the number is 347-308-8790. 347-308-8790. And this is a time of the show too where you guys call in and we let you get on the phone and tell your local crews thank you for the work that they're doing, congratulate them on shooting to rifleman standards, on passing any of their progress checks, on getting a red hat or a green hat, or doing promotional work, whatever it is. But you guys are welcome to call in and give your local crews thanks. And if you have a commercial venture that you are working on, then you're also welcome to call in and let us know what that is, and we'll try and get you on the air and get you some promotion for it. And folks at Blog Talk, I'm not charging anything for this. I'm doing this free of charge as a benefit to our Appleseed brothers and sisters. All right? So the number is 347-308-8790. Now, also coming up in the this next year is, I mentioned this to you guys this last Thursday, is the benefit that we're doing. It's the Appleseed, Battle Road, and Top Shot benefit. The guys from the History Channel Top Shot are going to come to the Battle Road Shooting Center here in Texas, in Davila. This is the Texas Top Shots, and we're going to be running a mini Appleseed, and then they're going to be doing some, I'm sure, some demo or some exhibition shooting. And we're going to donate the proceeds from this to the Wounded Warrior Program. All right. Now, we'll probably need some help with this as far as folks to help run it as RSOs and additional instructors, etc. So if you'd like to get involved with this, then contact Kirk Wheeler, Spitstickler, on the forum, because Kirk is ramrodding this event for us. He's doing a great job, as always. And if you'll contact him and let him know that you'd like to help out, this will be going on in June of 2012. But it'll be the Texas folks from the History Channel Top Shot, and then also sponsored by Appleseed and Battle Road Shooting Center. So that'll be coming up in June. All right. You guys know that later on, in just a few minutes, we're going to have the casting producer from the Raw TV reality show company that does, it's the Raw Television Company, United Kingdom, and Cheyenne Dillenberger will be on the show to talk to you about the possibility of going to a casting of or an audition for the show. I'm not going to even try and tell you what anything is about for it, because she's going to be in the show and she'll do all that. But they've done several of the reality shows that you see here, such as Locked Up Abroad and Gold Rush, and then quite a few other shows, I think, for BBC or BBC America, and she'll be on in just a few minutes. So I'm sure you guys will be excited to see your chances or to listen for advice on how to get your chance to audition for a reality show. And a call screener, you're asking me when she's calling. I believe she's going to call in sometime at right around 7:30 or so. So, so she'll be in just a few minutes. And also, we would like for you guys that if you have any announcements to make for the new year, then you're also welcome to call in. We've got a caller on the phone now. I don't see any information posted, but I'll go ahead and put you on. Area code 207, you're on the air.
I am.
That's it.
The old guy, Maine.
Well, hey, old guy, how are you doing?
Oh, pretty good.
You guys got any snow yet?
For you. What's that?
You got any snow yet?
We've had snow. We lost it all last Thursday. We had a heavy rain. We lost it. Well, we've got cold, frozen ground. No snow.
So you're calling in with guesses. All right, let's hear it.
Okay, the first one I figure is a pump action, the second a lever action, and the third a bolt action.
How about this? I'll tell you this much. You got the third one right.
Okay. All right. That'll make it easier for the next guesser.
You got the third one right, and you mentioned one of the right ones in the before the third one. So
okay.
I'll give folks that many. How's everything going in Maine?
Everything is going great in Maine. We got generate a few new orange hats last month, and actually early this month. And we've got some new ranges coming on. We'll more than double our shoots for 2012, and it's going good.
Well,
I've got
excellent.
A lead on a 400-yard range.
Well, that's good, because you guys don't have very much of the actual distance here, do you?
We've got one range that we haven't been able to. They shoot all the time. They don't want to displace their shooters to have a different event, which they see as a competing event. So that's probably not going to be a possibility this year, unless we can get a couple of their members to come to an Appleseed and fall in love.
Well, I've noticed that on quite a few ranges. It's very hard to get folks to, especially if the range only has one actual distance area, because, you know, we have to close down the range for Appleseed to use it, and the folks are very reluctant, especially around the larger cities here in Texas. There's only a few ranges that have actual distance, and they don't want to close them down for a weekend, because they've got their, you know, regular clientele that attend, and and we're still riding the Obama greatest arms salesman in the history of America wave, and folks are still going to the range. Now, I told the directors of the ranges, I said, hey, you know how Americans are. They're going to forget about why they bought the rifles, and they're going to stop coming, and we'll be there every month. But they're still reluctant to give us the ranges, so
yep.
We'll just have to wait. Well, I'm good deal for you guys on getting one, and I hope it comes through.
I found this gravel pit. It's nice level ground. We'd have to build an outhouse, which is a lot cheaper than renting a porta potty. But I own a backhoe, so that's not a problem.
Well, I've done that here in Texas because I was getting tired of having to put up with the shenanigans of the porta potty folks, and finally I said, "That's it. I'm gonna build my own." I built a huge, sturdy outhouse, and we've been using it for the last 2 years, and it's been working fine. We've been saving the organization a couple of grand by now on it, and it works just great.
Yep. Well, this one's going to be a big handicap accessible privy. But we've got to talk to a few family members to see if this is going to go. But we've got a real gentle slope going up, big safe backstop. I mean, it's like a mountainside of backstop. It was an old commercial gravel pit that's not being used anymore. And we can trim the bushes, and we can have 25-meter range. We can have 100, 200, 300, 400 meters. You might be able to get 500. I haven't measured that yet.
Well, that's excellent. You got anybody that you want to say thanks to there in Maine or anywhere in the United States right now?
Well, I'd like to say thanks to Sean O, who got Maine started. He's still kicking, and he's still working. He comes to every shoot that he can.
Well, excellent. And I want to thank Jimmy in New Mexico again. He sent us some more word on his Christmas for the Troops. And they're still going strong. Folks are still getting the gifts, and they are very, very happy with them. And we're very thankful that we've got folks like Jimmy in the program. And for you guys that don't know what I'm talking about, we have Jimmy out in New Mexico, Desert Eagle. And he has been running a program called Christmas for the Troops. And he put together 2,500 care packages for the troops and sent them a great assortment of things that they really needed, including a special run of knives from Smith & Wesson. And he put in some AQTs and redcoats for the troops, and they're going to shoot them there in Afghanistan, and then they're going to send us pictures of them shooting them. Hopefully some of them will shoot to rifleman standards, and we'll send them a patch there in Afghanistan.
Oh.
So I want to thank him. Anybody else that you'd like to give a shout-out to? Old guy?
Yeah, Tom in Connecticut. Tom is our state coordinator for Maine because we don't have one. And he drags it up, his old truck up here to Maine and comes to every shoot. And he's been doing it for 2 years at least. And, he keeps our program going.
Well, excellent, and I hope that the new instructors in training that you guys have in the pipeline, I hope you guys get them up to speed quickly and keep getting additional folks to volunteer to become instructors so that the program can continue to grow in Maine. What about, we have the guest coming on in a little while to talk about the reality TV show Casting Call. You have any folks there, or are you yourself interested in auditioning for a reality show?
I'm not, but I think I know one that might be.
Okay.
I had not heard about this before. But this is a new orange hat that we've got in Maine, and she lives about a mile and a half out in the woods, and there is no road going there.
All right. Well, be sure and get the information down. Listen, I'm going to take another caller. Oh, God, thanks. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you.
You're welcome.
All right. Take care.
Yep.
All right. Code 917. You're on the air.
Hey, it's Cheyenne from Raw Television. How are you?
Oh, hi, Cheyenne. I didn't know that was, I didn't see that that was your number. I was looking for a different number.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. I'm calling from my cell phone. Is this okay?
That is excellent. Folks, I want to welcome you to Cheyenne Dillenberger, who is the casting producer for Raw Television United Kingdom. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm actually in the New York office, but the RAW was founded in the UK, so their main office is in London, but I'm working out of New York on this new project. So, yeah, I'm happy to be on the show and really excited to talk a little bit about what we've got going on.
All right. Well, welcome to the show, and let everybody know what's going on. All I did was just give them who you were and that you're coming on, because that's about all I knew. So give us the spiel on what's going on.
Well, I will do my best. And Merry Christmas. Thanks for scrambling to have me on this week. I know it's a busy week for most folks, so I'm happy to be on the program. So basically, Raw Television, again, is a production company based out of London originally, but now also in New York. And we make a couple shows that people might be familiar with. One of them is Locked Up Abroad, which is on the National Geographic Channel. And then there's another one that's called Gold Rush Alaska, which is on the Discovery Channel. And that's, I believe, in its second season. That's just started a few weeks ago. So, you know, I don't know if anyone's familiar with those shows, but those are ours. And we're actually working on a new project, which is what I'm working on. And the new project is really, it's for one of the major U.S. cable networks. It's in the early stages, so we're not really at liberty to say which one it is at this point, but it's one of the ones that is a major one. And they're, you know, they're looking for something that's, it's kind of in response to how well Gold Rush has done and some, you know, viewers writing in asking for more of this type of show. And if anyone who's, you know, isn't familiar with Gold Rush, it's about a group of guys who, you know, moved up to Alaska to start prospecting and really, you know, have learned the hard way how tough it actually is and, you know, are really trying to make a go of it because other, you know, things that they had tried to do in their life didn't work out for them. You know, they were facing unemployment and so they decided, you know, in the face of this economic hardship, they were just going to kind of, you know, hey, there's gold up there. Some people are finding it, and they went up for it. So, you know, we're actually looking for somebody who's got a similar mindset in a way, people who are, you know, not content to just kind of do the status quo and, you know, work to live in the house, to pay for the gas, to drive to work, to, you know, that whole thing. And are actually interested in leaving that kind of lifestyle behind, going off-grid, as some people call it, going off into, you know, a more rough terrain or a pioneer-style existence and really starting a new type of life. So that's who we're looking for. That covers a lot of territory and a lot of different interests and terrain, of course. So at this point, it's really early stages, and we're just looking for people who might be interested in talking to them and kind of seeing what stories are out there.
Right, and I told my wife about this, and I have five young daughters, and I told my wife about it just as a joke, telling her that that we had been selected to do this, and I thought she was going to, in my mind, I was waiting for her to blow a fuse, because she's already, we live out in the middle of nowhere, and she's already upset that that it's an hour to get to any kind of a restaurant or any kind of a anything, to get a Big Mac, so she wasn't real. I figured she wouldn't be happy about that, but she was saying she thought it was a great idea. Now my daughters, of course, each one of them, they did blow a fuse, but it just makes me it just makes me kind of wonder, because you've got the folks that that you said that they tried other different things in their regular lives, and they decided, well, instead of doing one of these things that we're doing here, let's try the most difficult thing imaginable, which is to move to Alaska and live off the land and find gold. That should be easy, right?
I know, right? Well, you know, I don't want to speak for those guys, and I don't want to give away the show too much, but, you know, they were at their wit's end. They were facing really bad unemployment, things in their lives. It just, you know, they didn't really have another choice. They felt, and, you know, the truth of the matter is that, you know, there are people making money doing this. There are claims out there that need to be worked, and, you know, it's an interesting program. It, you know, they, I think their first go at it was definitely different than they expected, of course, and they faced a lot of challenges, and they're, you know, it's the season that's on right now. You know, you see that they've learned a lot, and they're, you know, approaching it in a different way. And, you know, yeah, it did seem, to a lot of people, it did seem a little bit out there. But, you know, modern technology, and, you know, they're not panning for gold. It's, you know, they have excavators and that sort of thing. But, it, you know, for them, it did get to the point where they felt like it was an extreme and almost dramatic decision. But
absolutely.
Felt like the right choice, because it, you know, if it did work out, you know, they knew what would happen if they stayed, which is, you know, facing this unemployment. You know,
right.
They knew that it was going to be dire straits, and if they left, you know, at least there's a chance that if they stumbled upon, you know, I mean, but that's, you know, that does say a lot about you know, and I'm sure everyone feels differently about this, but it says a lot about the economic climate in the country today, and, you know,
it sounds like you're trying to make it sound like a really smart, rational decision, Cheyenne.
Well, they are on television now, so they've got that going for them.
Exactly.
And I don't know those, and I will say, I don't know those guys personally. I don't work on that show, so I don't want to speak for them. So I really, this is a different project, and but I do understand it. You know, I do understand if you've got nothing going for you, and you don't have a job, and there are no jobs, and you get this opportunity to go, you know, and there are for sure, definitely, and you'll see on the show, people are, you know, making various amounts of money, and there are ways to approach it to make it a little bit more practical, which they've learned now. You know, it could be a good option for some people who want
I think you're absolutely right. I think it would be an excellent option. I think that anybody who had that chance presented to them, I think it would be an absolutely fantastic option, because anytime you're faced with trouble, or you're faced with economic hardships, etc., I think the very best thing you can do is to say, I'm going to challenge myself ultimately. I'm going to put all my chips in. I'm going to go for broke, because that's the spirit of this nation. That's the spirit that it takes to win. Nobody's going to get anything. Nobody's going to make it anywhere by surrendering, by giving up. You can never snatch victory from the jaws of defeat if you surrender. It's never going to happen. So I think that they made excellent choices. I think that.
I really do agree with that. I feel like, you know, it's all about being proactive. And when the things that, you know, I think for them, and again, I don't want to speak for them, but from, you know, the way I interpret the situation and the way that I, you know, feel about it, it really is, if you play by the rules and you do everything you're supposed to do to get this certain life, and then all those rules get thrown up in the air and it doesn't work like that anymore, you know, you really, it is a challenge to be proactive and to say, you know, what can I do to have the life that I want to have? You know, this, everything has been turned upside down, and this isn't the way it's supposed to go, but, you know, in the face of that adversity, you know, how do I move forward? And I think, you know, part of that spirit is what we're looking to capture in this new project, which is really just, again, about talking to people who are doing things that might inspire other people who are watching, might be things that people, it's really for us, and it's really exciting, the most fun for me, the most fun part of the job is really, you know, I know very generally what I'm looking for, but it's really all about talking to people and finding stories to tell. And so we don't really know, you know, what the show is going to be because it's all going to be based on who is interested and who comes to us and who is willing to tell their story. So, you know, at this point, it's really exciting and interesting because we just start getting these emails rolling in, you know, where people are saying, you know, things that I never even imagined people would be doing. But, it, you know, it's like they're, you know, we're going to go do this and we're going to go do that and this is our plan. And, you know, I think it's really it's the best part of the job for me because it really is all about telling those stories of real people. So, you know, we can take, you know, a second now just to tell people if anyone's interested in listening in, the best way to start the process, to start the dialogue with us is to email us.
What are you looking for? And are you looking for someone who is already, like, living in a pioneer fashion, living off the land, or are you looking for somebody who says, hey, that's what I always wanted to do, or somebody who knows what they're doing, or somebody who is going to like the dramatic implosion on the show?
A little bit all of the above, I have to say. Again, it's really early stages. We often call this the fishing trip part of the process, which is where we just talk to everyone who we can get a hold of and anyone who's interested. Because the direction of the show can really change based on who we meet and who we find out about. I will say, I'll just go through the categories. Someone who's already, you know, living off-grid or living just a different sort of lifestyle, you know, has left the rat race and is doing something else, we'd love to hear from those people. Though, for the show, it'd be really great if you had something that was going on in the next, you know, 6 months to a year, whether that be, you know, building a new project, having people coming to join you out on the property that you're living in, something so that, you know, if we go and film with you, it's a little bit going on, you know, in a something interesting other than, you know, today I'm going to make breakfast and then, you know, take it from there. So if you're already out there, we'd still love to talk to you, you know, especially if you have some plan or some goal that you're working toward. If you are, you know, still a dreamer and you've just kind of started thinking about this kind of move, you're reading the forums and the message boards, you're watching some of the programming that deals with this subject matter, if it's something you've looked into, however seriously or not, whether you're, you know, looking at land or you're just really kind of fantasizing about it, we'd love to talk to you as well, especially because that's really interesting for us to be able to follow someone as they, you know, do the process from start to finish. And anyone else, you know, people who really know how to do this and know that they could survive off-grid because they've done it before or because they have extensive training, we'd love to talk to those folks as well, just because, you know, again, it's all about finding the story and finding where that is. It's almost kind of like, you know, it's almost like an investigation or journalism in a way because we don't know what's out there until we hear from everyone. So, you know, we really rely on everyone who's interested to kind of tell us what we should be making the show about, which, again, is the best part for me to talk to everyone.
So this is the part that you really enjoy. Well, of course, this is your – you as a casting producer will pretty much set the pace for the show, right? I mean, because if it's going to be the folks that you select – that are going to make up the body of the show, which will then determine what the show is going to, what it's going to do.
Yeah, and I will say I am the front line for sure, but I work with a small team. There's three of us all together, and we are, I can just walk everyone through the process. So anyone who's interested should email us. The email, and I'm sure we'll repeat it a million times, is casting@rawtelevision.co.uk, and all of those emails go directly to me. So I'll write back as soon as I get that and let the person who sent it know that I got it. And then we'll start a conversation. We have a questionnaire that we're having people fill out. We do a quick phone call. And from there, it's really just kind of, you know, gauging interest, hearing what the story is. At a certain point, I'm going to present everyone that I talk to my boss. And again, further down the line, the network that is going to, you know, end up broadcasting the show will get involved in actual the final decision. So I am the first line, but it's kind of a long process. To actually make it to air, but again, it's sort of, you know, it could be a really great experience for whoever ends up on air. You know, I think it's just a really great way to get a point of view across, a story told, and again, you know, just, you know, to entertain people, but also to inform people about a different point of view or a lifestyle or, you know, something that they didn't know necessarily was out there. So I think that it can be, you know, really. Again, it's exciting for me, and I really do enjoy this process.
Well, let me give the email again out. It's and call screener. If you will put this in to the chat room too, it's casting casting at Raw Television, one word, rawtelevision.co.uk.
Yep,
casting,
and the reason it's
rawtelevision.co.uk. Go ahead, Cheyenne.
Yeah, I just wanted to say again, the reason that it's .co.uk is because our home base is in London, so it's that's how they do the emails over there. So that's why it's kind of a weird, it's not a .com. But yeah, those all go right to me, and yeah, again, I'll email you back when I get them, and we'll just kind of take it from there. And, you know, it's a pretty transparent process. It's really just about having, you know, starting those conversations with people and hearing what they're up to and what they're interested in, what's out there. You know, I've already talked to some families living off-grid in Alaska who, you know, fly to Anchorage maybe twice a year, and that's the only time that they are in town, as they call it. You know, I've talked to people down south who, you know, have some land that they call themselves preppers, and they're, you know, kind of forming communities for, you know, just in case there's some sort of disaster where they know that they can go. Yeah, so it's all these things, and I'm sure that there are more that are, you know, more stories out there that I can't even imagine. So, you know, that's why I really would love to hear from all of your listeners and anyone that they know of. You know, feel free to pass this along, because again, it's really, this is what I'm here for, is to hear from everyone.
Well, I'm sure that my family, I'm sure that they wish that we weren't living in the middle of nowhere. I'm sure that all my girls wish they were living there, you know, right down the block from you in New York.
Well, I have to say, I didn't grow up in New York. I am originally from a little bit in the middle of nowhere, Vermont. So.
Oh, really?
I actually just came from there. So, yeah, we got snowed in. Yesterday we got snowed in. We were supposed to get an inch, and I think we got, in some places, I heard 16 inches, so that's always fun. But we made it back to the city today, my husband and I. But, yeah, I know I try to – grew up on top of a mountain and somehow made it to Brooklyn. I don't really – my parents still don't know how that happened. But.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people don't realize – you know, they think of a movie or a TV show or something like that, and they don't realize what a team effort it is, because they think that there's just one person that is cracking the whip and where from all creativity flows. But, you know, I used to work before I ended up in the middle of nowhere as a prepper. Then I also did television and video and stuff like that. And I was really surprised the first time I did a feature film how much input a lot of the folks have, even just the guy who does the storyboard, because he'll write out the storyboard. You know, he'll draw what he envisions, what the director tells him. He'll draw out the characters and what the scene should look like from his point of view. And a lot of times, that's what ends up being put up there, is what the guy, the artist who does the storyboard, what, you know, he kind of determines a lot of what goes on. And the casting, the folks who do the casting, you know, they put together the the actors who are going to become the ensemble of performers for the show, and it's just a really, like you said, a team effort to get a program up and running, and especially if you're going to have a successful one.
Absolutely, and I think again, it can be such a fun process because you know you're really starting with nothing. You know what I mean? You're starting with an idea or a concept or you know words on a piece of paper, and then it really to get it on screen as a you know final product. It's such an amazing process, and yeah, it involves so many people on so many different levels. And yeah, I've been doing this, you know, 10-ish years now, and you know, it never ceases to amaze me. You know, what you start with, just you know, talking about an idea or something like that, like this project. You know, I'm sure it's going to be so exciting when it's finally finished because we start out and we're just talking. You know, we know that you know viewers are writing in and they want to see you know a certain area that they don't see on television. They want to see more people. You know, doing what they're interested in and doing what they're doing, you know, and so that kind of starts like that. And then, you know, we start reading websites and going on message boards and forums and, you know, talking to people like you. And that kind of starts the ball rolling a little bit. And then people email in and sort of start telling us their stories. And it really is amazing what can come of that, you know, once you find a group of people who, you know, when it all works out and you make the show and then it, you know, it goes on television and millions of people watch it and are captivated by the stories, you know, it's really, that's a great feeling and it's really cool to be a part of it. So, you know, again, I know that this is probably one of the most unique projects that I've worked on. It's definitely, you know, it's a tall order in many ways to find people who are, you know, willing to do this and interested and have the stories that we're looking for, but again, like, I'm just really looking forward to hearing from everyone. You know, to tell me what you know the show should be about and tell me about their lives.
What do you have? Would you like to answer some questions?
I can do my best. I can try.
All right. Okay. Here we go. Hold on. Okay. Area code 951. You got some questions for Cheyenne? Oh, hold on. Let me try this again. There we go. The switchboard is kind of funky sometimes. There you go. Area code 951. You're on the air?
Hello.
Yeah, you got us. We're here. We're on the air. You have some questions for Ms. Dillenberger?
Yeah, I tuned into the program late, but could you tell me, please, why you chose this topic for your program? The producer, please.
Hi, yeah, I personally did not choose the topic, but I work for the company that was actually hired by the television network to do the topic. And from what I've heard, the topic came out of, you know, viewers writing in on, you know, message boards for shows like Gold Rush Alaska, saying that they wanted to see more of that kind of stuff. So they want to see more people who are, you know, doing you know, different sort of ways to get money, living different sort of lives. You know, they're not doing, you know, a 9-to-5. They're not, you know, living in the suburbs. They're kind of doing this adventurous spirit, pioneering kind of stuff that, you know, we think in modern society you can't do that anymore. That's, you know, who does that? But actually there's a lot of people who are doing it and working. It's working for them, and they're actually finding that it's more satisfying, you know, than what you might think. So I think that that's kind of where it came from. And again, you know, I'm a part of a big team that's all working together to try to find stories of people who are doing that sort of thing.
Well, there you go. So is this something that you think you would like to do? Who is this? Is this one of our Appleseed folks?
Yeah, this is a California Appleseeder. This is Francis Marion.
Well, hey, Francis Marion. How are you doing?
Hey, doing good, Scout. Thank you for the good work you do for us every week, too, by the way.
Well, listen, my pleasure. I wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't for you guys. So it's always my pleasure to bring you guys together and to speak to you guys. Well, what do you think, Francis Marion? This sounds like something for you, because I know a lot of people think California, and the media picture they get in their mind is of surf dudes and stuff like that. But I know California has some of the largest concentrations of prepping folks that there is in the nation. So is this something that is appealing to you?
Yeah, very appealing to me. I don't know how well my family would fit this mold, but if I knew somebody who I thought would fit, I'd definitely mention it to them.
Well, make sure you that you copy the email for this, and let's see, and Cheyenne, give out the website. Oh, here, I've got it right here. It's rawtelevision.co.uk. That's the website for the Raw Television. I'm sure you can just Google Raw Television, and you'll get to it. And you said that, or did you say that they were still doing Locked Up Abroad?
Yeah, they make Locked Up Abroad is on the National Geographic Channel. And that's been on, you know, I think it's been on probably at least 5 or 6 seasons. Again, I don't work on that show specifically, but that's something the company does make. And, you know, I am a big fan of that show. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but I think that that's a very, very interesting show, and I'm surprised it took as long as it did to get something like that on air. But that tells stories of people who, you know, ended up in prison systems of other countries, and they're very usually very harrowing stories of how they ended up getting back home, if they did end up getting back home. So
and listen, guys, I can tell
show.
You right now that that is probably going to be, that show is going to be a lot easier to get onto than the show that Ms. Stillenberger's casting right now. Because all you need to do is secrete some drugs or over $10,000 in cash or anything like that on you. And then when you start going through the customs in Colombia or something like that, let a little dribble out, and and they will be glad to take you into custody. And then five or six years later, send an email to Raw Television and tell them you're ready for your 15 minutes.
There you go, and then you'll get a whole episode, or maybe half an episode to yourself. Yeah, make sure you're sweating a lot too while you're trying to get that.
Yeah, exactly. Now I have seen the Lock Up Abroad show, and I got to tell you that in one way I feel for those people because prison is no good. No matter what you've done, it's no good. Now I'm not saying that you don't deserve it for some idiocy, but most of the people that Locked Up Abroad seems to feature are folks that they have there's some compassionate angle that they can somehow connect you with, because it'll usually be somebody that is they're like the last person you would expect to find in a prison. It's not hardened killers or anything like that. It's I think the one I saw had some jazz musician that thought he could make a few extra bucks by smuggling something and ended up in a, I don't know, South American prison somewhere. And he was, scared to death. And he shouldn't have, he's not the kind of guy you'd ever imagine would last more than a few hours in prison. But I think that this project that you're working on now, and I haven't seen Gold Rush, but I did try to read up some of it about it before you came on. And it does sound like a very, very interesting thing, and like you said, the chance for somebody to, especially if you're at your wit's end, and you need something, and this is something, and regardless of whether you find gold or not, it's going to change your life, and I'm sure that that's what those guys are experiencing, and I'm sure that if you take the plunge and you send Ms. Stillenberger your email. And you happen to get selected, I can guarantee you it's going to change your life. So, all of you folks listening, even if you think that you don't have a chance in Hades for getting on there, you never know. Because Cheyenne, didn't you just say that the folks that you're looking at can be from one end of the spectrum to the other, right?
Absolutely, and I would say, if any of this kind of piques your interest at all, send me that email and let's just, give it a chance to have a conversation, because really I think We always like to say in the casting end of things, we don't really want to, usually we don't really want to be talking to people who want to be on reality television. We usually want to be talking to people who don't want to be on TV or don't think that they should be on TV, because usually those are the people that actually, you know, have the real interesting stories. And so, again, it's like if you don't think of yourself as somebody who should necessarily be on television or you don't think that what you've got doing, you know, going on is the perfect thing, I would say if any of it, you know, strikes a chord or sounds, you know, familiar to you, definitely shoot me an email and no pun intended.
Well, I'm sure that if even if you're the person that in your mind is thinking, man, there's no way I could do this because I imagine that that I would have a nervous breakdown on the, you know, midway through this thing, et cetera, you probably have as good a chance as anybody else to get on there because that's what, you know, that's what a good reality TV show has is drama and conflict and everything else. If it was just a bunch of guys who were like the guys from Seven Brides from Seven Brothers, and they were living out in the middle of the woods chopping down trees and living just fine without anybody until they went and stole some wives. Although there's another good idea for you right there, Cheyenne.
It's probably
not going to be a good show because they're all going to be happy. They're going to be singing songs. They're going to be doing just fine without anybody. So they need some of you guys who are going to self-immolate and just kind of boil apart at the seams and stuff like that. So.
Your words, not mine. No, I mean, you know, here's the thing. I think if anybody looks, you know, at their lives and you know that if you're going to be putting yourself in a challenging situation, you know, there will be a story there. There will be some, you know, challenges, drama. And, you know, we're not looking to put a group of people who don't like each other out in a cabin in the woods so that they can yell at each other and fight over who gets, you know, more, you know, servings of food or not. This isn't anything like that. You know, we're really looking for people who are, you know, independently minded, you know who they are, believe what they believe, you know, really do feel like there's a better way to be living, you know, have a family or have friends that they can go do this with, you know, have really been thinking about, you know, building a new community, a new, you know, a new version of the world for themselves just because, you know you can do it and you think it will be better. And that's kind of who we're looking for. And, you know, it's not about screaming and fighting or anything like that. It's really about, I mean, you don't really have to make drama when it's going to be man versus nature or, you know, building anything when there's survival involved or when you're going off grid. I mean, there's nothing easy about that. It's a very busy lifestyle. From what I've heard, I myself am using lots of electricity right now. I was invited to go live on a yurt earlier today. So, you know, you never know. By the end of this, everyone at work is saying that I'm going to end up moving out in the middle of nowhere myself. So it is very enticing even to me.
Well, after you hear about it, then you'll understand more the reasons why, because living in New York, I'm telling you, that would just, there's no way. There's absolutely no way I could do it. I don't care what kind of house you gave me or how much land. If I was living in New York City, I would just be a mess because there's no way I could do that. Breathing
well,
the air that everybody else had already breathed and,
myself too. There have been moments definitely that shook me to the core, whether it was the blizzard that we had in New York last year that, you know, shut down our subways and the roads for many, many days, or, you know, the blackout that we had a few years before that. You know, living through that stuff, you really do realize, you know, certain pros and certain cons about being in an urban environment when there are emergency situations like that. You know, you realize that feeling of being trapped, you know, hits you right in the face, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, well, I'm stuck here now, you know, and okay, well, what do I have here, you know? I mean, for us, you know, we had, Hurricane Irene was going to hit New York, and they were telling everyone to prepare. We, you know, we had to go to the store just to get, you know, a couple gallons of water. It wasn't something that we even had on hand, and it really makes you, you know, batteries for flashlights, things that you don't even think. It didn't cross my mind at all really before that, and then, you know, these things are kind of happening, and it makes you realize,
That's exactly what I'm talking about, Cheyenne, is not so much me being there, because if I was there, I would be prepared. But now you're talking about 10 million other folks who aren't, who don't have, they don't have water, they don't have food. They don't understand that stores nowadays only have 3 days of food on the shelves. No matter what store it is, there's only 3 days of food on the shelves. After those 3 days, that's it. There's nothing else, and you have 8 million hungry people. It's going to get nasty quick.
And you're on an island.
What do you think? Yeah, on an island too.
And you're on an island. Yeah, I mean, we have a car, and it's like the car will do you no good. You're not going anywhere.
Oh my God.
Nervous laugh. Yeah.
That's
very. You know, it's definitely it's crossed our mind more than a few times, and it's always a very tense situation.
Yeah, because we have, well, I'm not going to go into it a lot, but we have meetings every 2 weeks hashing out the details for us who live out here in the middle of nowhere, and it's already hard enough doing that. I can't imagine what it would be like to try and figure out how to fix a bad situation in the city. It's already hard enough with just us out here living in the middle of nowhere. So, man. Well, Francis, does this sound like something that you're getting ready to sign up for?
Yeah, I'm going to turn my form in tonight.
Well, what is the I haven't met you. I haven't been out to California in the last few years, so where do you guys live? What's your situation like? Are you guys in the city? Are you out in the boonies? Where are you guys? You don't have to tell me a specific place.
Yeah, we live in a city in Orange County, California, so we have a pretty high population density here.
Yeah. That's Orange County is a pretty that's going to be a rough situation there. So, well, good thing that you're an apple cedar, because you know, apple cedars are folks who've already taken several steps to ensure have the right frame of mind to help safeguard the freedoms and liberties that living in the nation, this nation, affords us. So good. But you said you've got some other folks that you're going to send the information to, and let me give the information to the call screener again, so he can put it back onto the website there. Call screener, it's casting, CASTING, at rawtelevision, one word, .co.uk. Casting at rawtelevision.co.uk. And Cheyenne said, for everybody out there, everybody who has any interest in this, whether you think that you're a candidate or not, to shoot her an email, and she'll discuss, she'll help you figure it out. Okay, let me put it that way. She'll help you figure it out if you need to go any further with this or not. And just like she said, if you're a person who's dying to be on a reality TV show, then that may not be you. It may be the folks that are sitting there listening tonight saying, "Oh man, there's no way I could do that," or "there's no way I might think about that." Well, think about it for a minute. Think about it, because just like we were talking about earlier, that the folks who were on the last show on Gold Rush, that I guarantee you that taking on a project like this is going to be a life-changing event. And anybody who does this, I would be willing to bet that that it will be one of the high points of your life, and certainly something that some memories that you will, I'm not going to say cherish, because you may not cherish them, but you'll certainly remember them, I guess, the rest of your life, won't you? And I imagine it's going to end up changing your life too, Cheyenne.
Oh, I'm sure it will. You know, I mean, really, every project I've ever worked on, you know, no matter what stage it is, you know, you meet people that you never, you know, would have met in your day-to-day life, and you really have, you know, connections with people that you, you know, I have people all over the country that I've, you know, filmed with or talked to about whatever, you know, different projects, and, you know, I still get Christmas cards from people and send them out myself, and it really is, it's a really cool experience, and, you know, I really don't, you know, I think it's a cool thing, and to start the dialogue really again, I'll just say, you know, shoot me an email, we'll have a conversation, you know, sending an email doesn't make, you know, you're not promising to do anything or be on the show or lock down or sign a contract or anything like that. So, you know, it really is just kind of a starting conversation. And we are really, you know, we really do need to kind of have this, you know, outreach because we don't know what's out there. It's kind of, you know, we're doing a journalistic investigation or, you know, research for a documentary. It really is, you know, who's out there, what's out there, you know, tell us because that's the only way that we're going to find out.
Well, I started laughing because you were talking about the lockdown thing, and I believe that's kind of how this got started is because we got an email from you, and I responded jokingly because I was kind of viewing it as a way to smooth out the operations at Appleseed that I think I offered to help Ms. Dillenberger to like abduct and subdue some of the folks that were more hard to get along with in the Appleseed Project if she would take them to a foreign country and put it on TV so that we could get some gratification by watching them experience difficulties. So, and she did decline to do that, but so we brought her on the show instead. We're still hoping, though, that might still happen, you know, that some of the folks might still just volunteer for this and be selected. So we could still get lucky.
Yeah, I mean, they'll be off the grid, so you won't hear from them for who knows how long.
Well, how about giving us, and I know that you don't have anything set in stone right now, but do you have any kind of a timetable for this?
Yeah, you know, ideally we do have some goals we're trying to hit. Let's see. So this coming week we're accepting submissions and we'll be reviewing them and talking to people as best we can. I have two people that I'm working with, and, you know, for the most part I'm going to be getting everyone's emails. I'm going to be, you know, emailing back, setting up phone calls, and doing all that for the next week and a half or so. And then after the end of the second week of January, we're going to have a little sort of summit with our bosses and just kind of see what we've found and who's kind of standing out to us. And then from there, you know, we usually do some preliminary filming with people. And, you know, hopefully by the end of the month, you know, we have a goal to show some of the standout people to the network and see what they think. And, you know, I think, again, it's sort of a long process, and a lot of things can be thrown into the works to start and stop it. But, you know, ideally it would be something that we would be filming this spring through the summer, you know, with the right people. So, you know, if we find the right people, it can kind of get moving pretty quickly. But it's all about finding the right people. So that's really
right.
where the timeline hinges on that.
Okay, so the project, and like I said, nobody's holding you to anything you're saying now, because it's all pretty much up in the air. But it's a possibility that if you met all the requirements that you need, that filming could begin as early as the spring and then go into the summer. Now, and is that basically, this isn't like and any idea of where it's going to be?
Again, that's going to be dictated by the people who are on the show. You know, where do they want to go? It really is where, you know, we are trying to keep our hands out of it as much as possible. and really be there, you know, to document and to tell the story. But we're not doing anything at this point. It's not our plan, or you know, we have no agenda to sort of make it like Survivor or anything like that. So it really is.
Okay.
We really are looking for people who want to do this, and we'll kind of tag along and film it as it happens. We're not, you know, the way that it is now is that we're not, you know, we're not looking to pick a bunch of different people and throw them on an island somewhere. It's really a different show than that.
Okay. And, all right. Well, then, so you basically answered the question, because I was going to ask, like, the length of time and stuff, but what you're saying is that really right now it's already kind of you've thought out the parameters of it, but it's still in its infancy as far as the skeleton of what it's going to be, and that will be dictated to a great deal by the powers that be and by the folks who end up getting cast.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, we will change to certain degrees for what will work with the people that we've cast. You know, so if we have a group of people who are amazing and we really want to tell their story, and they can't or won't, you know, move or start their project until a certain date, then, you know, we can be pretty flexible, you know, to make that happen. And, you know, there's just it's really going to depend on who we're working with. And, you know, I really do see all of these types of shows as collaborations. And that's kind of, you know, we're looking for people to help us make a good show by putting their lives on camera. And so we all, you know, ultimately we want them to be happy with the process and the product, because, you know, we want it to come back for a second season. And if they're not happy, they're not going to come back for a second season. So we really want it to be something that works for everyone, and is a positive experience. And again, life-changing for sure, no matter what happens. And, you know, I think the potential for some really great stuff to come out of it if, you know, everyone is patient for the process and, you know, it's sort of in for the ride, I guess I'd say.
Okay. And we've got, if you'd like to ask a question, we've got a few more minutes. If you'd like to call in, the number is 347-308-8790. I don't know how much time Cheyenne has left, but if you call fairly quickly, I'm sure we'll be glad to get you on. 347-308-8790, and the website or the email address is, let's see here, I've got it right here, casting, casting, at rawtelevision, one word, .co.uk. If you'd like to send Miss Dillenberger a email with your ideas of what you'd like to do and why you'd like to do it and why you should be living wherever, in the middle of nowhere, in a tree, because it's better, because you can make it a better world by living in that tree or by having your family somewhere else, then she wants to hear that. She wants to read your emails. So send them to her. And she said that the next week or so they're going to be going through these emails, and I'm sure, you know, you said you're going to talk, you'll answer everybody as far as you'll let them know that you got their email and that you're reading it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll email back and let you know I got it. I'll probably ask you some questions. You know, it's great when you send the email, do explain your situation just a little bit, and that helps. You know, you don't have to spend too much time on it. But, you know, something that can kind of help me understand where you're coming from and what your plans are would be great. And, you know, I get a lot of these, so the funnier the better. If you can throw a little personality in it, that's always more entertaining for me, to be very selfish. But, yeah, I'll email you back, and I'm going to do my best, you know, to set up calls with people as quickly as possible. You know, and kind of take it from there. And, you know, it really is just about getting to know everyone and hearing their stories and their opinions. And, you know, we are, again, looking for people who have strong personalities, are comfortable with who they are, you know, are not afraid to tell me, you know, what they feel and tell it like it is. That's always helpful. and, you know, again, yeah, that you think you really have a good plan and are really, even if you're not 100% sure you're going to do it, have thought it out a little bit about what you would do. That that would be ideal for us. And, you know, I also think, you know, anybody who's got multiple families that are going out to do this together, or friends, or even your extended family, you know, that's always helpful. If it's, you know, more than just one person, you know, that's a little bit better for us, just because then you'll have someone to talk to, which helps for television. But yeah, you know, again, anyone who's out there and is, you know, thinks that there's a new, better way and is, you know, fed up maybe with the way things are going in the country, the status quo, for whatever reasons you have, you know, I want to hear those reasons, and we'll take it from there.
Well, I think that I'm going to make sure that I submit Johnny Appleseed and Savage Shooters names for this, because they're two great people that could do this, and I'm actually just kidding. Now, they may want to do it, but Johnny Appleseed is one of our instructors. He's a great guy, but he's got to be the absolutely most sharp-dressed Appleseed I've ever met. So I'm not betting a whole lot that he'll end up there, because he's a very sharp-dressed man. But then again, he may. So Savage Shooter and Johnny Appleseed, and let's see who else. Western Rose and her family. Now, there's a good bet these guys might do it, because they're already living out in the middle of nowhere in Idaho, the whole family, and they're a whole family of independent-minded folks. And I bet that they would. You'll be hearing from them. And
I would love to.
And my partner here at Battle Road, Mark, I talked to him about it, and he said the only way he could do it is if it's somewhere that the temperature isn't below 70 degrees and there's a flush toilet.
Well, that doesn't sound – I mean, here's the thing. You know, again, it doesn't have to be rustic, you know, pioneer living style. It can be whatever you – you know, it doesn't – again, I think that off the grid now most people know can be many things. You know, I'm talking to people who are off the grid but are on internet or on – you know what I mean? So it's really –
Oh, exactly.
It can be many, many things, and I think the full spectrum is great, and I want to talk to everyone. And again, you know, it doesn't have to be that you're just moving there to live there. It can be that you're moving there because you want to set up, some sort of marksmanship training school, and you want to have people come out there and learn, these skills and lessons, and kind of do what you guys do on the road, but in one place, and you just need it to be, away from people because it's easier or because you need the space or something like that. You know, we're really open to a lot of different reasons and plans, and we want to hear what those all could be, because that, you know, that's really the exciting part for us. We don't want to tell people what the show is. We want you guys to tell us what it is.
Right, and I've seen plenty of folks who are off the grid, who you walk to their house, and there's no way that you would know that, because it looks like a very high-priced, modern home with everything, all the amenities. Maybe not television, but some of them had television, satellite, stuff like that. But their electricity came from their own generated sources, and everything that they did was, they were not in any way connected to any other services, electrical, water, anything. And they were living out a pretty fantastic life there. So, and I didn't think about that, but you're absolutely right. I mean, off the grid doesn't mean roughing it. So you guys have a pretty wide spectrum of available, or the applicants can be from any spectrum. So
absolutely, you know, I'd say the only thing you have to have is that real sort of pioneer adventurous spirit where you're, you know, you're really willing to kind of face challenge and do something a little bit off the beaten path or a little bit different. You know, I think that, you know, the independent-minded person is really who we're looking for. So that would be probably the only really solid criteria.
Okay. And once again, for you folks, I know that not everybody goes into the online area, but and a lot of folks are going to get this through Archive, because we'll get we'll probably get a couple of thousand folks just on Archive on this without getting the chat. So let me give you the address again. The email address is casting, C-A-S-T-I-N-G, at rawtelevision, one word, .co.uk. And for more information about what they do or some of the programs and stuff that they're involved in, you can go to rawtelevision.co.uk or just do your Google for Raw Television, and that'll take you to them. These are the folks that put together Locked Up Abroad and Gold Rush, and then they also do a lot of stuff for BBC, right?
Yeah, you know, I'm not too familiar with the stuff they do in the UK. I work in the New York office, so I'm more familiar with the stuff they do here. But yeah, you know, if you go to that website, you'll see they've done everything from Feature Lakes documentaries to, you know, specials. Gold Rush Alaska is in its second season on Discovery Channel right now, so you can definitely check that out. But you know, they do a lot of different sort of investigative pieces. And, you know, everything from what they call factual to entertainment. So, you know, there's a lot of different stuff on there. And, you know, they're an award-winning company, and, you know, I'm really excited for this project. And I think, you know, it is a really refreshing and interesting process to be going through with them, you know, to really be looking for people to tell their stories and not trying to sort of force any situations or anything like that. So, you know, I feel like they're great storytellers and, you know, have the ability to make this a really great project.
Okay.
And I want to thank you so much and thank all of your listeners for letting me gab for so long. You know, I hope to be hearing from all of you.
All right. Well, listen, thank you, too, and we've given out the all the information and stuff, guys, so if you guys, if any of the folks that are listening, if you'd like to do it, then have no fears. Jump in with both feet. And I know that all of you all know somebody, some of the folks that you associate with or your weird uncle or anything like that, then you can give them the information, pass it on, so that you, too, can have some involvement in this. You can be the people that help discover the next reality show folks for the reality show networks out there. Well, Cheyenne, you got anything else that you want to let anybody know? What about and I think you already mentioned this. Are you kind of? And I know that you can't say anything about this. But you kind of hinted at it already when you talked about the Gold Rush folks, and that is that that there would, I'm sure, possibly some type of a paycheck for this, right?
Yeah, you know, that's definitely not my area for negotiating or anything like that. I am just a casting producer, but it has been my experience. People do get an appearance fee, you know, there's a, you know, they get an appearance fee to be on the show.
Right.
I don't know what that is. And that's, you know, sort of a long road again. So if you get selected for the show, then there will be a contract drafted and everyone should have lawyers and, you know, work it out that way. And not my forte, my area of expertise, but,
right. Well, that's all you got to say. I mean,
yeah.
I wasn't expecting you to even say that much, but I just wanted to to get that in there, that, that usually in most cases it has been historically that there has been some type of remuneration for this. So, and we'll just leave it at that. So I doubt that they're going to ask you to pay your way to live in some kind of thing, et cetera. Or you may just be doing it for free because you want other people to see what a wonderful life you created. But and then, of course, like she said, then everybody can get lawyers and machetes and hack it out.
Yeah, that
okay.
is the fun part. That's the not fun part for me.
Right. Well, Cheyenne, thank you so much for coming on and letting the folks know what's getting ready to go on. And I'm sure that there'll be some folks contacting you soon. And we wish you the best of luck with your show and a happy new year.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you guys, too.
All right. Thank you, ma'am.
Have a good night. Bye.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye. All right. Okay, so you got it there. This is everybody's chance to become a reality show superstar. And I told you that I mentioned it to my family, and I was surprised because my family is all for the idea. They're getting ready right now. My daughter Kathleen is busy chewing on some raw leather to soften it up so she can make her some leather shoes and stuff like that. My other daughter, Caroline, is very busy filling up a pillowcase with Hershey's Kisses so she'll have something to eat while she's there. So, so this is your chance. Be sure and send an email to Ms. Dillenberger at casting@rawtelevision.co.uk. All right. Okay. And Francis, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. Did you have anybody that you wanted to say thanks to in the California program, or any announcements you'd like to make about California, or anything at all you'd like to say to the folks?
Yeah, just let me touch on what I began the speaking to you about, and that's just to thank you for what you do for us every week. And Scout, what you do is you give everybody a chance to say thank you for the people in their state and on their teams who are doing great things, and that's good, but let's turn that back around at you, and I think I speak for many people in this program who look forward to your radio broadcast and who are anxious to get the latest updates and find out what's going on and who's doing what. And you give that to us every week, Scout. And in addition to your busy life, you've got a working ranch, you got your things and your family that you're doing, but you make time for this every week, and I really take my hat off to you, and I say thank you.
Well, you're more than welcome, and I appreciate you saying that. And I'll tell you this too, that I was busy this evening, and I started working on another project, one of the 10,000 that I have unfinished here, and my wife happened to ask me something. I don't remember what it was, and I realized that I had the show ready, but I completely forgotten that I was supposed to do it, and you know, I had a little heart-stopping moment there where I was thinking, "Oh my gosh, what day is it? What time is it?" And rushed in to hurry up and make sure that I was ready. Now I had plenty of time to do it, but you're right. It's every Thursday night. It used to be every Tuesday night. Now it's every Thursday night, and the show must go on. And speaking of the show going on, I want to remind everybody again that we're going to have as our guest next Thursday night is Dr. Hackett Fisher, who wrote Paul Revere's Ride, which is our textbook, our unofficial textbook that we use. And I'm going to ask him about getting some of the royalties from him since we're doing such a good job on selling that book. And he's going to be on to talk about his book, his Pulitzer Prize-winning book, by the way, Washington's Crossing. And I asked him to be on at this time of year because this is the time of year that that the events at Trenton and Princeton went on, you know, in the dead of winter, 1776, 1777. And he's going to come on and talk about that this next Thursday. And Dr. Fisher is always a great guest, and he's a great guy to talk to, and he's extremely intelligent and very, very knowledgeable about the events of the American Revolutionary War, about a great wide range of things. Yesterday we were discussing because one of the things that I was always curious about is, you know, we talk about all the folks at the North Bridge and Concord. We say, wow, you know, these guys, they fired off a volley, and down went eight guys right off the bat. But if you look at the battle, you'll see that that there were approximately three companies of British regulars there at the North Bridge. And if you've been to the North Bridge, you can see it's much the same now as it was then. You have the path leading to the bridge is depressed. It's kind of below ground. They have a stone wall on each side. And that's what kept them bunched together, where they were down in kind of a sunken roadbed with a stone wall on each side of them. Now, you have the colonists from Concord who marched down off the hill. Now, you can still get to the hill. It's off on – you can't see it anymore because that whole area is now forest, much different than it was 236 years ago. But there is a trail, I believe, that they keep open heading up that way. Anyway, they marched down off the hill, and they crossed the T, which is a naval term for what you want to happen, which is to have all of your guns facing the enemy in a naval battle, where you can give them a broadside, and yet they can't fire at you. And that's exactly what they did. They had approximately 500 guys strung out, where they could fire all onto the British regulars that were clumped together there. And those guys could only the front ranks could fire back. And so I've always thought, well, that's good, but, you know, if you have 500 guys firing at the broadside of the barn, then you'd like to have, 250 so of them hit it. And what we were talking about was the work of S.L.A. Marshall and Colonel Grossman, and the information that both of them had found that they only had statistics for World War II, and the rest of the information that they could gather was only anecdotal, and that for World War I and the Spanish-American and the Civil War. And that is that in World War II, approximately, there was only approximately 10% of the soldiers were actually firing at the enemy, right? Only 10% of our troops were actually firing at the enemy. There were a great deal of folks who were firing, but not at anybody, or at least not at anybody in particular. They may have been pointing their rifles in a general direction, or maybe they weren't. Maybe they were shooting into the dirt in front of them or over the enemy's head, all right? And then there were even a greater number of soldiers who were not firing at all. So you look back at the battles of World War II, and you see the tremendous carnage that was created, and then you have to reconcile that with the fact that that only approximately 10% of the soldiers were actually shooting at the enemy with an intent to cause bodily damage or to kill them. And And that becomes fairly amazing because it makes you wonder what would happen if 90% of the troops had been firing at the enemy with the intent to kill or cause them bodily damage. What would have happened then? Would have made the war over sooner? And what about this? What about if every one of them were riflemen? And they were riflemen, and they had the intent to do damage. So that will make you think a lot more. And the problem is that the folks at Concord and the folks at all the battles from World War II, World War I, the American Civil War, they were not. There's a great inhibition that's inherent in humans, and there has to be against killing another member of your own species, because organisms that have no inhibitions about destroying members of their own species don't seem to do so well, unless they have unless every organism has 100,000 offspring, right? Otherwise, you would cause yourself to go extinct. So there has to be an inhibition against it, and it's good that there is. But the folks who fight in the wars and who fought in World War I and World War II and the American Civil War and the American Revolutionary War, they weren't killers. They weren't murderers. They were just regular folks. They didn't want to hurt anybody. It was one of the furthest things from their minds was to actually hurt someone else. So you put that on top of a musket, which you're good to about 70 yards or so. You know, around 70 yards or so is about the distance where you can say, yeah, I'm going to hit something at this distance. And the distance they were firing from was a little bit over that. And that starts to be able to reconcile the casualties with the number of folks firing. the folks, after the Battle of Gettysburg, they went out and they gathered the firearms, the muskets, off the battlefield. And I believe, if I'm right, I believe that they may have gathered up 26 or 27,000 rifles from the folks who had been killed or injured or who threw them down and ran. And surprisingly enough, they found out that a great deal of them, I believe actually more than, much more than half, had not been fired. They'd been loaded, and they were ready to fire, but they hadn't been fired. Now, the first thing you want to think of is you say, well, that person probably got shot before they could squeeze the trigger. Well, that would account for some of them, but it wouldn't account for all of them, and it certainly wouldn't account for the thousands of rifles that they found that had been double-loaded or triple-loaded or loaded four times or five times or seven times. And we're not talking about a few. We're talking about thousands. And the several, I believe it was 100 or more, that had been loaded over 15 times, right? So what does that tell you? It tells you that that person was going through the motions. They were putting in the powder, putting in the cartridge, ramming it home, and putting it up to their shoulder and going through the motions, but they didn't squeeze the trigger. And then they would go through it again. They would go through it again. And the information that they found, at least from World War II, is the only place that this wasn't true was from the soldiers who were serving on crew-served weapons. That means if you had two or three guys that were working a 30 caliber or a 50 caliber or something like that, that they were not failing to fire. They were not missing because they had someone there who was witnessing them. They were watching them. And so they were doing their duty. They were doing their job. Whether they wanted to or not, they were doing it because they were expected to do it, and they had someone witnessing it. Now, they found the same things out from different units, especially the units like the Scottish units in the American Revolutionary War and several of the other wars at around the same time period, because the folks in those units, they came. They all came from the same towns. They all were either related or they knew each other. And when one of the individuals failed to live up or meet the requirements of a soldier, what they considered to be a soldier, then his name would be posted in the public area, in the commons, in his hometown. So in order to escape that humiliation, then he fought as a soldier was expected to fight. Now, in the chaos of thousands of men together on a battlefield, it's going to be hard to tell whether anybody is shooting at what they're supposed to be shooting at or not. And the only way that this was changed was at the end of Korea and in the beginning and during the course of the Vietnam War, where American soldiers were taught to shoot at human-like targets. And this helped to break down their inhibitions against shooting at another person. They were taught to shoot at human-type targets. And then, of course, you know, you hear all the stories in basic training of how they were taught to be killers, and it was plugged into their head to do that, and that was acceptable, etc. Now, that changed dramatically changed the number of folks who were actually firing their weapons at the enemy. Now, you can say that changed the data as far as them firing at the enemy. Now, whether they were hitting the enemy, that's a completely different story, all right, because of the different staggering amounts you get of the number of rounds expended versus the enemy kill in action. You know, and you hear different things, but one of the common numbers that put out is over 1 million rounds of ammunition per a enemy KIA in Vietnam, which is a great amount. And, of course, a lot of that's because of they're fighting in the jungle and can't see who they're shooting at, etc. But a great deal of it is that there has not been as much emphasis on marksmanship as I think that there should be in the military. And I know that they're doing a lot more nowadays for it, but I can tell you from when I was in that even though I was always in a combat MOS, and even the days when I was running in 11B, the combat infantryman, that you don't get you get very little trigger time, get very little instruction, and I only got any additional instruction after I'd wormed my way further and further into special ops. And even then, one of the only reasons I got any additional instruction was because I kept volunteering for different firearms and ended up doing the combat biathlons with M14s and stuff like that. Otherwise, you get very little rifle marksmanship, which I've always amazed me, because that is supposed to be the job of our men, is to defend this nation with rifles if needed, and hopefully the Appleseed Project can help change that. And the more that you guys go out and invite American soldiers to attend free, then the better we're going to do. Francis, got some more you want to jump in with?
So, Scott, have you been to Battle Road? Have you taken the tour?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was just thrown off a little bit. You know, that's the name that we gave to our shooting company here, is Battle Road Shooting Center, and one of the reasons is because of Battle Road there in Massachusetts. And yes, I didn't take the tour, but I gave my family the tour. And we started off at Lexington Green, and I think I told you guys this before, that that I gave my family the mission of scooping up some dirt from Lexington Green. And so I said, all right, everybody scatter out. Don't make it obvious. And so we scattered out across there. We're digging up different, little dirt with twigs and stuff and get it. And I said, well, I'm going to get some from over at the graves. And I went over to the graves, and I stuck my hand in between the bars and started scratching down to the dirt, to get to the dirt, because it felt like there was gravel on top. And so I'm scratching down to get to the dirt. And to my horror, I'm scratching in a big pile of change, because people had been throwing change onto the graves. And I was horrified, and I took off immediately because I thought, oh, my gosh, that's the last thing I need is to, the newspaper to read, apple cedar gets caught stealing money from graves of, the heroes of Lexington Green. And but we got some dirt there. We went to the tavern. We went to the North Bridge of Concord. We went to Punktastic Hill. We went to the other homes there. I scooped up several gallons of water from the they had passed under the North Bridge. And then we listened to the National Park Service folks give the history of the events at the North Bridge, some of which I disagreed with, because one of the things they said was that the troops returning from Barrett's Farm, the British regulars who were returning from Barrett's Farm once they heard the gunfire there, that they were able to pass back into town because the militia was so confused that they were wandering around and they didn't see them. And we know that that's not the case. The case is that the militia was still operating, because at this point it wasn't a full-on war yet, because we know that the North Bridge wasn't the third strike of the match. They were still operating under the conditions of do not fire unless fired upon. They let them pass by because they didn't shoot at them. If they would have shot at them, there would have been no confusion. They would have been wiped out. And then we went. Then we walked along the road back to Merriam's Corner, and then continued on at different sections. And we passed by the graves of the British regulars that are still there, and then the British folks who visit still plant Union Jacks at the graves, and it was a great time, and the kids all enjoyed it. And what about you? You're asking because I know you've been there.
Yeah. My wife and I went there last year. We loved it, and I'd like to mention to every American family who may be listening to your broadcast, it's absolutely free. It's a national treasure. All you have to do is simply show up, experience it, and learn. You don't have to pay a cent. It's not like going to the Grand Canyon where you drop your $20 at the entrance and then you can go visit your national park. Oh, no. This one is free.
That's
so
right.
So if you want to take your family, I highly recommend it.
That's right. And it's one thing to read about the history. It's another thing completely to stand there where it occurred. All right, listen, we got the English ladies in my ear telling me we got 90 seconds. I want to thank everybody for calling in. I want to thank our guest, Cheyenne Dillenberger. I want to thank you, Frances Marianne. I want to thank our call screener. And let me give you guys out the correct order for the firearms. The first one was an H&R M1 Garand. The second one was a Mossberg 835 Ultimag. And the third one was a number one Mark III Lee Enfield. That's the three firearms. At the beginning of the show, I worked the action on each one of them and asked folks to see if they could tell me which one was which. And we didn't get – we almost got a correct answer, but not quite. Listen, thanks, everybody. Thank you, Francis. Thanks to the call screener who's here every week with me. And we'll see you guys next week, Thursday, January the 5th, 7 p.m. Central. Be sure to be there for Dr. David Haskett Fisher. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year's, everyone, and good night.
Tracking who we meet, and call this liberty.